Welcome to Le Breakdown. This is your host Yasser Louati coming to you straight from the Paris South Side banlieue. Thanks for the love and the messages. I did not expect that when I published my podcast last week. I know, you know, it was, you know, the first one after I think a break of a year and a half or two. And I sincerely appreciate the messages I received on social media and, you know, private messaging. So glad to be back, and let's get right into it and cover what has been making headlines in France. And I'm going to be more specific. On the 28th of September of this year, 2023, a journalist was raided by the police, or more precisely, our domestic intelligence services, and she described the raid as an early morning one, with people showing up to her place in Marseille with big suitcases to siphon all the available data on her electronic devices. And it turns out that she had been under surveillance by the government for a series of revelations that actually made headlines a couple of years ago. Ariane Lavrieux was interrogated by the police for 39 hours. Of course, the objective here is to push her towards a breakdown and for her to confess and, of course, reveal her sources. She was then deferred before a judge, what we call juge des libertés et de la détention, who is in charge of deciding of your fate, whether you remain in custody or get, you know, a break and freed until while you stand at trial. So what was Ariane Lavrieux responsible of, according to the government? Well, she was guilty of revealing to the general public the extent of the collaboration between the French government under François Hollande and then his successor Emmanuel Macron with the dictatorship in place in Egypt. The operation was called, is called Surly, that's Sierra India Romeo Lima India. The operation was launched back in 2015 after an agreement between then Minister of Defense Jean-Yves Le Drian and his Egyptian counterpart Setri Sobhi, in what was called back then an extremely favorable climate following the sale of course you guessed it, 24 or about 24 Rafale fighter jets, along with two warships. The transaction reached about $6 billion. And Ariane Lavrieux, through the website that she works for, disclosed they revealed a stack of documents, wrote a series of papers under the label Egypt Papers, and they showed how highly trained personnel and highly sophisticated electronic equipment was used by, you know, I would say the Egyptian dictatorship in the name of fighting terrorism. French pilots and intelligence officers from both countries overflew the Egyptian-Libyan border, or about 1,200 kilometers. A French airplane was used, French pilots, French experts, alongside Egyptian intelligence officers, and it turns out that this collaboration in the name of fighting terrorism led to the killing of hundreds of civilians that were never tried, that were never convicted terrorists, and they were just executed at the demand of the Egyptian government. Now, I'm not saying that the French military did kill those, but what I'm saying is, per the revelations of Disclose and the papers on this collaboration, French means were used to engage in extrajudicial killings under the authority of a brutal dictatorship, in this case in Egypt. Of course, the French government, be it under François Hollande or Emmanuel Macron, knew all along. They were informed by the military personnel in place and despite the language barrier, they raised their concerns, and it was obvious to them that the people getting killed were not terrorists. They were just, you know, civilians engaging in the smuggling of food, clothes, tobacco, to name a few. The French military personnel raised the issue as early as April 2016. Now you have to remember, this early operation was agreed upon in early 2015. So about a year into the operation, people began raising doubts. Yet, whichever government was in place, be it the so-called leftist government of François Hollande or that of supposedly centrist but obviously a right-wing government of Emmanuel Macron, both of them kept the operation in place. And of course, I mean, what is at stake is this Rafale fighter jet and warship deal worth something like $6 billion. Now, just to give you a bit more information about how this website Disclose has been in the crosshair of the French government. Since 2018, at least five of their journalists have been interrogated by domestic intelligence. This is not Tunisia's Ben Ali or Egypt's El Sisi, whatever. We are talking about France, the country that constantly lectures the rest of the world on freedom of the press. I will get into that by the end of this episode. And in this country, journalists get interrogated for revealing the shady deals of the government with brutal dictatorships abroad. Now you can imagine in a country like this one, having a journalist being raided, interrogated like a criminal, and for such a long period, I mean, we're talking about 39 hours. I was myself interrogated for 8 hours, I mean, like, no, if not, I think 12, when I revealed the death of a black woman on her workplace in France. And I can tell you, when you spend 12 hours in that cage, and, you know, you can tell like they are trying to play, you know, mess with your mind until you give up, it is not a very pleasant experience. Several journalists, now back to April, Ariane Lavrieux, several journalists called out the police raid. Of course, it made headlines, and several journalists, like, you know, took the microphone in the radio morning shows and, you know, on the 8 p.m. news bulletin, etc. However, I personally do not take them seriously because I have not heard them call out, as it should have been the case for years, the ongoing torture of Julian Assange right now in the UK, who is standing trial and potentially be extradited to the US for his revelations through WikiLeaks and government corruption, shady deals, support dictatorships, etc. around the world. And it is difficult to really take journalists seriously when they all of a sudden realize that, you know, journalists can be raided. Journalists get killed almost every week around the world. Take a look at what's happening in Latin America. Take a look at what's happening in Mexico, in Vietnam, or other places, you know, in Africa, in Cameroon, or in Egypt. You know, talking about Egypt. And now they realize, oh, well, this is wrong. Honestly, I think it's a bit late. And I will give you my two cents about how I view the profession of journalists in France and why they are getting, I'm not going to say what they deserve, that would be highly unfair and even shocking to some extent, but they are just getting what they have refused to see coming at them for the past, I would say, at least 15 years. So at the time of recording, it turns out that Ariane Lavrieux's case is pending trial, and so far the judge she has faced has approved the raid against her and the method employed, even though, and rightly so, many have called out the disproportionate means used against her and the obvious attempt to intimidate her and, of course, send a broader message to journalists across the board. Now, when the Minister of Justice, Éric Dupond-Moretti, was asked about this case, he basically ducked for cover and said, "We will let the justice do its job." I don't think Éric Dupond-Moretti is unaware of the disastrous image this constitutes. I mean, for the government to raid a woman in her place on French soil for doing her job is extremely shocking. Éric Dupond-Moretti knows the damaging effects of such a raid and how this makes it blatant that his government, the administration he is part of, has knows no boundaries when it comes to fighting against the right for the general public to be informed. He just put into practice what another very known political figure in France said, Jean-Pierre Chevènement, who in 1983, while he was, you know, expressing his disagreement with François Mitterrand, he said, "A minister shuts up or resigns. Un ministre, ça ferme sa gueule. Si ça veut l'ouvrir, ça démissionne." And that's not exactly what he did. And the sentence, or the quote, the expression, has been, you know, quite famous ever since. Now, talking about, again, the harassment of journalists in France, and what the case of Mrs. Lavrieux reveals, is that we cannot really say we live in a democracy if we don't have free access to information. I mean, like, how could you vote, since, you know, for many, you know, democracy is about voting, even though I disagree with that. That's very a very restrictive definition. But let's say, how can you possibly vote while being ill-informed? I mean, how can you keep the government in check if you don't have access to what the government is concealing from the general public? And here we are not talking about something that can jeopardize national security, even though I'm one of those who believe that the state should be transparent and is on citizens to enjoy privacy. But that's another debate. In the case of France, here we see that the harassment of journalists is something quite common. Another case made regional headlines, I won't say national headlines in France, is the case of Morgane Large. A couple of years ago, she revealed the toxic practices of the agro-industrial business, the extent of pollution they were concealing, the collusion between local political figures and business owners in her place of origin on the west side, La Bretagne or Brittany. She was harassed regularly. Her dog was poisoned, her car wheels were unscrewed, hoping for her to get into an accident. She, of course, received threats on the phone, etc. And the anonymous calls kept going for weeks, if not months. She did not receive any support from the government, nor from the local authorities, for example, at the prefect level. Other cases should have been ringing the alarm bells and make people get furious about how this government is dealing with our access to information. Three journalists from the center-left newspaper Libération, Ismaël Alissat, Fabien Lebouc, and Antoine Schirer, have just been interrogated by the police for their series of revelations on the killing of another Arab man in France, Amin Leknoun, in the northern city of Neuville-en-Ferrin back in 2022, excuse me. And it turns out that the police abused the use of force, and that the supervising authority, the infamous IGPN, or the General Inspectorate of the National Police, failed to properly conduct the killing of Amin Leknoun. Well, they were, of course, called in for interrogation, and their offense was, well, violation of the secrecy of the investigation. Well, they're just doing their job, so there is no secrecy when you are a journalist. And concealment of violation of the secrecy of the investigation, probably because they refused to give up their sources. And this one is what actually got me in trouble, actually five times, you know. Yeah, I said it, like, you know, I got sued five times for my work on racism in the French administration, on police brutality, etc. And it turns out that we share quite a few things when you work on government wrongdoings. It's the accusation of, quote unquote, public defamation of government employees. Now, this is worth mentioning and highlighting. In France, if you conduct an investigation on a government employee, whatever you reveal, and whether what you reveal is true or not, you can be sued. This is not libel. This is tarnishing the reputation of a government employee. And as if the government was encouraging its employees to go after those who work on them and expose their wrongdoings, all their court fees and lawyer and legal fees are covered by the government. So when I got sued five times, I had to beg for money, even though they knew damn well that they had nothing on me. But because they sued me, I would be busy defending myself, and they knew I could not afford to pay five lawyers or five times the same lawyer to take care of my defense. And for the same work, I was put in a cell twice. And this is where things make me a bit uncomfortable when I see journalists, you know, actually white journalists, you know, scream and shout and cry on social media and mainstream media about freedom of the press. This is not something unseen, to have the government crack down on people investigating its work. However, it becomes an issue when white journalists are targeted. And that's the thing I have a problem with, because this is something we have been seeing on and on. However, some can get the proper means to defend themselves, some don't. And in my case, yes, I had to stop our investigative work because, hey, I got responsibilities towards the organization I am part of. I cannot, you know, engage in massive lawsuits and drain our resources, though I did drain our investigative resources because the energy spent defending myself was not used to do something else. And this actually reminds me of, you know, what Michael Jackson, just to quote him, you know, sang about. But they told me a man should be faithful and walk when not able and fight till the end, but I'm only human. So I had to make choices. And the decision was to cut short our investigative work, even though I know there were political ramifications. In the case of the death of Mrs. Sabine Vorin, it led to an administrative investigation in the City Hall of Paris. The City Hall of the 20th arrondissement, or the 20th borough of France, had to sack the person we exposed, the number two guy at the City Hall. The Directeur Général des Services would be the head of the General Services, the person in charge of city employees. Then the mayor of Paris, who stands above the arrondissement mayor, she refused to have this mayor run for re-election because of the case that was pending and because of our revelations. And then, because that city hall could not properly prepare for the election, given the massive case on the outgoing mayor, they ended up losing the city hall. Now, we did not do that to reach that aim, but voters were highly upset at this mayor, who by the way, this mayor is a founding member of the most notorious, or one of the most notorious, Islamophobic organizations in France, Le Printemps Républicain, which has heavily campaigned since 2015 to further criminalize the presence and visibility of Muslims by weaponizing laïcité against them. And one of the most famous guy in their ranks was Laurent Bouvet, who theorized left-wing Islamophobia under the term cultural insecurity, i.e. the visibility of Muslims is making white people feel insecure. It's the left-wing version of the great replacement theory coined by Renaud Camus. Now, I'm just going to stop my digression here. So back to the issue of freedom of the press in France. Let's just forget my case and just, let's say I do not exist. We have had a long history of French government going after journalists. For people from my generation who were kids in the 1980s and teenagers in the 1990s, we grew up in the background of our political, a spectacle. We grew up with the case of Les Écoutes de l'Élysée, or the wiretapping of the Élysée Palace. The story is very simple. François Mitterrand, socialist president in the 1980s, was known to be authoritarian. He was known to be, he had a very conservative view on power. And as France was engaging in nuclear testing in the South Pacific, or more precisely, in the atoll of Mururoa, Greenpeace was heavily campaigning against those nuclear tests, and their famous boat, or their famous ship, the Rainbow Warrior, was constantly roaming around the area to prevent the tests being carried by the French military. François Mitterrand is highly upset. His Minister of Defense wants to push forward ahead with the testing, and it turns out that not only did François Mitterrand order the sinking of the Rainbow Warrior, but the journalists covering the campaign and the sinking of the ship, they actually blew the ship until it sank. One Portuguese photojournalist was killed. He left behind two orphans. It turns out that François Hollande had put several journalists under surveillance. So one of them who would later become famous, Edoui Plenel, it turns out that his phone was wiretapped by the government. And again, this is going to make a smile, as in hindsight. François Hollande ordered the wiretapping of people in the name of national security. It turns out that François Hollande again wanted to have a special intelligence cell at the Élysée Palace, and this intelligence cell would wiretap people based on national interests, understand, at the request of the president, because they answered directly to him. The excuse was to put Irish nationalists under surveillance in order to reveal their wrongdoings on French soil, their political activism, if not potential terrorist attacks on French soil. Well, just like we hear about counterterrorism being used against journalists today, it was the case in the 1980s. and the supposed wiretapping of potential terrorists was used against journalists. And one of them was Edwy Plenel, who became later, you know, famous. He co-headed the daily Le Monde and is now the founder and chairman of Mediapart, one of our most famous investigative papers. Now, one might think that it was an accident. No, it wasn't. Because these practices have been ongoing for years until this day. But in order for the government to properly protect itself from the work of journalists, another conservative president, Nicolas Sarkozy, who himself, you know what, I'm gonna give you some candy here so you can know a bit better about our politicians in France. Nicolas Sarkozy was president of France between 2007 and 2012. He got elected on a highly conservative platform, if not a far-right platform. He basically came up with the idea of an unapologetic right, meaning that identity issues should not be the monopoly of the right, and therefore what was the traditional conservative party, which means center-right or the Gaullian or the legacy of Charles de Gaulle, would now shift further to the right in order to tap into far-right ideology and get far-right voters to vote for the conservative party. Nicolas Sarkozy, so he comes to power in 2007, and under his watch, we see the acceleration or the expansion, of the repressive apparatus that would be used against journalists. I'm not talking about, you know, identity politics and counter-terrorism measures. I'm talking about specifically targeting journalists. And you will see how Nicolas Sarkozy had his reasons to crack down on journalists. So he's in power between 2007 and 2012. In 2010, he made sure that a law was passed in 2010 to protect journalists, of course, under pressure from the European Parliament. But he made sure that there was a gigantic loophole for the government. So sources were to be protected. Indeed, you might say. But, quote unquote, sources cannot be protected if public interest requires it. So which means, if the government says it is in the interest of public, it is in the interest of the general public to know the sources of journalists, well, journalists have to reveal their sources. And as if that wasn't bad enough, a year later, more precisely, on November 2011, a ministerial order, which means basically it's like an executive order, but at the ministerial level, a ministerial order argued that allowing a leak to take place is sufficient to be considered an offense and hence worthy of prosecution, meaning that if, as a journalist, you allow a leak to take place, which means you have not read the leak, you just received it, you can be prosecuted. Earlier, I said that Nicolas Sarkozy had his personal reasons to make sure that he had legal means to crack down on journalists. Well, Nicolas Sarkozy, former president from the Conservative Party, then the UMP, now called Les Républicains, the Republicans, this guy will be tried in 2025 in connection with suspicions of Libyan financing of his 2007 campaign. The Paris Court of Appeal confirmed the Paris Court of Appeal confirmed the conviction of the former president of France to 3 years in prison, including, and you know, hear me please, including 1 year for corruption and influence peddling. And it also issued, this court also issued a 3-year ban on civil rights rendering him ineligible should he ever run for office again. Another case. He was accused in the court of law of seeking to obtain secret information from a magistrate at the Court of Cassation, which means our highest court in France. This magistrate called or named Gilbert Azibert. Nicolas Sarkozy tried to get information from him, and in exchange kind of mirrored to him a prestigious position in Monaco. Right? Now, what was Nicolas Sarkozy seeking from this guy? Well, Nicolas Sarkozy's Minister of the Economy, Eric Woerth, was embroiled in a massive scandal, the Liliane Bettencourt scandal. Why? Because Eric Woerth, however you say it in English, W-O-E-R-T-H, Eric Woerth in French, his wife, he actually tried to get her a job at the service of Liliane Bettencourt, who was, by the way, the wealthiest woman in France, main shareholder at L'Oréal, the cosmetics maker. So he tried to get his wife a job. The problem is, during that conversation, which was being recorded by a person present in the room, it turns out that Liliane Bettencourt, according to the recordings, may have engaged in tax evasion through Swiss-based bank accounts. And Nicolas Sarkozy was trying to get information about that case. Well, he got tried for that, and Nicolas Sarkozy was sentenced to 1 year in prison 2 years ago, September 2021, for, quote-unquote, illegal financing of an electoral campaign by the Paris Criminal Court. He is also, and that's why we have to understand where this is coming from, this repression of journalists. He is also suspected of having financed part of his 2007 presidential run with money coming from Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. Now, remember when Muammar Gaddafi, threatened to make explosive revelations about France? Look it up. Who was in power when French troops bombed the hell out of Libya? And under whose watch was Muammar Gaddafi killed? I'm not throwing accusations. I do not need another court case. I'm just asking stupid questions. That's all I'm doing. So you have a president who knows he did, he left a mess behind him during his run to become president. I mean, he was known to desperately want to become president. Well, with this gigantic loophole he left in the 2010 law to protect journalist sources, you add to it the 2015 law that legalized mass surveillance. And now, for those who listen to this podcast, you heard about it more than once. It's a law that was passed in the aftermath of the Edward Snowden revelations, which made mass surveillance in France completely legal, to the point of requiring black boxes from ISPs, internet service providers, so that would send all of our browsing history to the government indiscriminately. We don't have to go before a judge or seek permission or target a person and start snooping on their exchanges. Whatever is published or done or browsing online just goes directly to the government. It also legalized the IMC catchers, those big suitcases sometimes you see in documentaries or movies that allow intelligence services to siphon all the conversations around a specific block, which means you open the suitcase, you power it, connect it, and then that's it. It gets all the conversations taking place around that particular spot. that is made legal without going before a judge. And this is why the situation is extremely dangerous in France if you come to be in the government's crosshair. So this law on mass surveillance is not only geared, you know, or aimed at people who keep the government in check and, you know, do proper investigative work on its wrongdoings. It's every single citizen. And this is, you know, the war on terror has not only been a disaster at the military level, at the foreign relations, at the international level, it has also been a total disaster, an apocalypse, when it comes to our basic fundamental rights as human beings and our relationship with the people deciding over our lives. This law was passed in 2015, and to make things worse, the Hollande government who passed it, a so-called socialist government, after refusing to grant asylum to both Julian Assange and Edward Snowden, hammered this law down the throat of French people by telling them, you need to give up on the very idea of privacy if you want to be safe. Well, terrorist attacks kept happening in France for years to come, and the government never backed down or never backtracked on these laws. And to make sure, you know, that the government continues to act in complete opacity, evades scrutiny, the Senate, controlled by the Conservative Party, made sure that all protections for journalists would be removed from the law in the name of protecting the fundamental interests of the nation. Now, French democracy is not adrift. We are not experiencing one accident after another. This is how French democracy works. And this again is a direct legacy of our monarchical history. We've been a country that has been ruled by absolute monarchs, and we as a people have not fully grasped the ideal of democracy. It's not about voting every 5 years for the president or for the mayor or for your member of parliament. It's about how we organize ourselves politically and how the government works for us, the majority, and not for them, the minority, those who hold the political and economic reins. But if the situation is bad and terrible for journalists today in France, journalists also have their fair share of responsibility. In France, it is not shocking to see a journalist marry a man in power. It is not shocking, or it is not, you know, unseen to see a member of the government married to a notorious journalist who would cover what he does as a member of the government. We saw that with Jean-Michel Blanquer, a minister of education whose wife partner, whatever, was working at the French version of Fox News. And she was covering his events and, you know, making a fuss about every little thing he did to make it seem relevant. And to quote a famous journalist in France who has been hosting a famous show called Cash Investigation that has revealed a myriad of scandals, you know, pertaining to tax evasion, pollution, government wrongdoings, collusion between power and money, etc. She called out her own colleagues for their proximity with the political establishment. Now, If you were a journalist, you are part of a counterpower. You cannot be part of the government. Otherwise, it's no longer journalism, it's propaganda. Now, you can engage in government propaganda if you want to. However, keep one thing in mind. First, your salary is paid from my pocket. It is utterly unacceptable that the money you get from me in the form of taxes would be used to engage in communication stunts on behalf of people who don't answer me at the political level and who constantly push for less and less transparency and weaker checks and balances. Now, coming back to Emmanuel Macron, he's just accelerating what was started before him. Under his government right now, there was a bill proposed by his party in order to ban VPNs, you know, those virtual private networks that allow you to conceal your IP address when you go online. They even tried to have that banned. We heard calls from the same government under Emmanuel Macron to ban calls for mobilization on social media following the massive demonstrations that followed the racist police killing of Nahel earlier this year. And this country is addicted to liberticide laws. Again, mass surveillance, centralized biometrics files, comprehensive security law of 2021, the anti-separatism law to crack down on the capacity for people to mobilize. Now, of course, as you heard it before on this podcast, this law was passed on the backs of Muslims to make it more acceptable. But this law is about cracking down on any organization the government is in disagreement with. What Ariane Lavrieux revealed is not only an unacceptable collaboration between France and a dictatorship that overthrew or toppled Egypt's very first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi. It also revealed shared values between the government of France and the government of Egypt. If that wasn't the case, well, the French government would have put a halt to this collaboration when the military personnel in Egypt raised the red flag about what was being done to Egyptian civilians. Nothing happened. But maybe, and I know I'm not far off when I say this, maybe Emmanuel Macron, deep inside, thinks that Arabs do not deserve democracy. Now remember, back in 2003, Jacques Chirac went to Tunisia, then ruled by the dictator Zine El Abidine Ben Ali. And when he was asked about human rights in Tunisia, the imprisonment of political opponents, the imprisonment and harassment of journalists, the absence of free speech in Tunisia, his answer could not be more cynical. Quote unquote, "The first human right is to eat, receive treatment when you are sick, receive an education, and a house." So when Emmanuel Macron and his predecessor François Hollande keep going with their collaboration with the Egyptian dictatorship, maybe deep inside, that's what they think. That human rights are not for everybody. Now, to conclude this episode and to let things sink in, because don't finish this episode still thinking that what's happening now is just a series of accidents. That's the way the French Republic is supposed to function. And if you ask questions, well, the typical answer was given by Olivier Véran, the government's spokesperson, when asked by a journalist, "Is this normal under democracy?" talking about the raid against a journalist. His answer was, silence. Now I know some will keep quoting Macron when he said that he will always be on the side of those who struggle to inform us, who fight for the truth. End of quote. I'm going to finish with a Jacques Chirac quote, this one again very famous. When he was asked about promises by politicians, he said, "Promises only bind those who believe them." This was Yasser Louati on the Breakdown. Talk to you soon.